Fritz Rocks. 91.3 FM, WLVR, Bethlehem, with a block of Bad Co. and Free. That one right there, here's a deep track for you. Do Right by Your Woman. That's from Run with the Pack. Before that, from Free, Walk in My Shadow from Tons of Sobs. Still such a classic album. Before that, Free's Little Bit of Love. And there's that inkling there, that sound that kind of takes you to the Bad Co. era. Before that, Bad Company's Good Love and Gone Bad from Straight Shooter. We also gave you the title track from Holy Water. And before that, the title track from Burning Sky. And kick things off with a triple shot from Free. We gave you Fire and Water. We also heard I'm a Mover. And way back there at the top of the set, we kicked it off with The Stealer. Welcome to the Wednesday edition of the Fritz Rock Show. I'm your host, AJ Fritz. Joining us today, live on the phone, one of the legendary drummers of probably one of the premier rock bands of the early and mid-70s that really, really captivated our hearts, our minds, our souls. I'm talking about the band Bad Company, of course. And before that, that really powerful thing called Free. And behind that band, you know, was the incredible rhythm and drumming style that kept that band in the pocket for so many years. We're talking about the legendary Simon Kirk joining us on the phone today. Good afternoon, Simon.
Hey, good afternoon, AJ.
Great to talk with.
That was quite an introduction, man. You ran off about 12 tracks from Free and Bad Company. I'm really, really impressed.
Well, you know, that's the beautiful thing about college and community radio, because it's free form, and we don't have to play a playlist. We make the playlist, Simon.
Oh, wow. Well, that's great. And I'm Walking My Shadow. I think that was the first song that Free ever recorded.
Oh, wow, man.
Very first set, yeah.
So obviously you're a little impressed at what was in the set today.
I was knocked out. I'm sitting here with my jaw open. When you said I'm a mover and walking my shadow, I thought, my God, we were all toddlers back then.
Yeah. How old were you then on that first Free album?
We recorded that in 68.
Wow.
So I was 19.
Man. Just to think to be that young and be in a band that had set some standards back in the day and took us to a new place in rock and roll. And then, you know, to move on to Bad Company, quite the career that you've had in. And I got to give you props for that. You know, Jim Della Croce is with us in the studio today, and we were talking a little bit about drummers, and one of the things that I've noticed about your playing over all the years, you really kept it deep in the pocket. You know, not very flashy, but a lot of feel and a lot of groove in what you did over the years.
Thank you. Well, you know, I was never really very technical.
Yeah.
All my influences were, you know, the field drummers like Ringo and Charlie Watts.
Mm-hmm.
And Bonzo, you know, John Bonham and Levon Helm, Hawkins. But, you know, Roger Hawkins was with the Muscle Shoals band, but the king of them all for me was Al Jackson Jr., who was with the Stax House Band. And he's my number one influence. Wonderful drummer. Died very young, but... you know, before I go on stage, any show that I play, I listen to a bit of Al Jackson, Otis Redding, Sam and Dave, Wilson Pickett. He was my man.
Yeah, man. So, you know, there's that soul. There's that deep soul that keeps you driving behind the kit and when you're on that throne, you know?
It was a very minimalist type of drumming style, Simon, wasn't it? It was more intuitive and in the pocket and not overplaying.
Yeah, you played... Yeah, I played primarily for the singer, whether it was Paul, you know, obviously most of my career was with Paul Rodgers. So I've always played for the singer and then the guitarist second. And but really, encompassing everything is the song. You play for the song, you play for what is needed. And, you know, fortunately, I play a bit of guitar and piano, so it's like having another language in my vocabulary. So I kind of instinctively know when to lay back and when to push forward, you know. And it took many years, because when I was growing up, you know, I had a mishmash of all different styles, and I was a lot more busy. And you know, if you play Tons of Sobs from Free, you'll hear that my my style was a lot more beaty than it is now, and I was still learning. I was still, you know, full of piss and vinegar, as you say.
Yeah.
Well, how is it now, Simon, when you have another drummer serving your songs and you're out in front with the guitar or the piano?
Well, it's a novelty for me. It's wonderful. You know, a friend of mine who helped me put this band together in the Pennsylvania area, Ellen Joy Vohl, she sent me YouTube clips of these guys. And the drummer, Jeff Cozol, which is very good. He teaches, but he was a little bit busy for me. So I said to him, look, you know, just keep it dead simple with the occasional fill. And when we had our first rehearsal last week, it was wonderful. He played really well. And, you know, a good drummer is someone who can take direction without getting offended. And a good drummer should play for what is required of the song, not what he requires of the song.
I think at one time, Simon, you had mentioned that you had a discussion with John Bonham about playing in the big arenas and the stadiums and the particular style that you would use to get yourself over, so to speak. And you and Bonzo seem to kind of share a technique with the kick drum.
Yeah, well, you know, the thing about playing any large arena, whether it's an arena, basketball court, or a stadium, is that you get this kickback, you get this echo.
Yeah, and that reverb.
The horrible reverb, or even a slapback, which is even worse.
Yeah, a slapback.
The first time I ever played Madison Square Garden was free. I'd never been in such a big place in my life, and when I hit the snare drum, it went clack, 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 clack. There was like a millisecond delay.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm getting off the point that when I talked with Bonzo, you know, we agreed that we had to keep our style a lot more simple than perhaps if we played up close and personal with in a smaller place. I don't know. It seems the further away the audience was, the more simple it required to get through to them. And you know, John was possibly the greatest hard rock drummer, or certainly one of the greatest hard rock drummers that ever lived. And if you listen to his live work, it's so simple and solid, with the occasional 30-second kick drum note or a flashy fill. But, you know, most of the time he played very simply, and he was a wonderful drummer.
Oh, no doubt about that. And Wonderful. Speaking about Bonzo, you know, I was a big fan of Zeppelin, still am. And, but, you know, what was really, I think, very impressive was that when Led Zeppelin's contract ran out in 73 with Atlantic Records, they decided to form their own label, the wonderful Swan Song label. And 1974 rolls around, and one of the first bands they signed was Bad Company. And tell me a little bit about that experience, just being part of the Swan Song label.
Well, it was like the perfect storm, AJ. You know, we had just formed, Paul Rodgers, myself, Mick Ralph, and Boz Burrell, and we were all from different bands, from Free, Mott the Hoople, and King Crimson. And, you know, we'd all had our little crosses to bear with these other bands, and we wanted a really good management. And we, you know, Paul Rodgers, and I have to give him credit, was the guy who said, well, you know, who's the biggest band in the land right now, and who's Led Zeppelin, and who's their manager? And it was a guy called Peter Grant, who no one had really heard of outside of Led Zeppelin. And we had our tour manager used to work for Peter. So he got in touch with Peter, and he got in touch with Paul Rodgers, and he came down to meet us. And after hearing us play, you know, he said, wow, you're really good. And, you know, Led Zeppelin have a label, and we'd like you to be on the label. And we said, yes, please.
That was a no-brainer, huh?
No-brainer, yeah. And they were so nice to us. You know, they were a little bit, I think Bonzo and me shared about, I think it was about 2 or 3 months older than me.
Yeah.
But the others were just a little bit older. They were, you know, a couple of years or 3 years older. Jimmy and John Paul obviously had been around a long time, even though they were only in their late 20s. They've been around as session men.
As session guys, yeah.
Yeah, they were very seasoned. They were seasoned veterans.
Yeah.
They were like big brothers to us.
They're nice.
And, you know, Jimmy appeared now and again. He played a couple of songs with us on the road on our first tour, and that caused an absolute riot whenever he appeared.
I bet.
It was just so nice. Yeah.
Well, you know, there's only a few artists that were signed to that Swan Song label. Another one of my favorite bands was the Pretty Things. So, you know, to be on that label, you know, Bad Company was, of course, the band that reached gold and platinum status. Pretty Things, not so much. But, it showed us, the listener, you know, the kind of company that you were keeping by being around, and being on that label, which is pretty impressive.
Well, you know, look, any band that has their own label, they get first dibs as to who's going to be on the label. And really, we were lucky, and they were lucky to have us. I mean, I'm not being big-headed, but we were a pretty damn good band.
Yeah.
And we were very lucky to have them, and coupled with their status and our ability to deliver the goods. You know, our very first album went, I think it's up to over 10 million now. So, but it went platinum almost out of the gate. So We enjoyed a lot of success with them, and their label had success with us. But, you know, with the Pretty Things and Maggie Bell and Detective, you know, they didn't have such good results.
Yeah,
That's as much as I could say on that. It was just one of those things.
You know, I'd like to talk a little bit about the transition, that whole time period when Free kind of fell away, and we had the tragic story with Paul, the great Koss. I still refer to him as Koss when I play him. And we lost him so young. And tell us a little bit about that whole transition between Free and Bad Company. And were you guys really, you know, conscious of what was happening in between that whole transition there?
Before I answer that, are we lying? Are you? Hello.
Yeah. You're still there?
Yeah.
We got a terrible connection here right now. Oh, where's he at, Jim? Up in the Catskills or what?
Simon is somewhere in eastern New York.
Well, the mountains.
I'm pulling over now.
Yeah.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, yes. Now we got you, brother. Now we got you.
Now we lost you.
Simon. Yeah. We lost you there for a second. Anyway, you're listening to 91.3 FM WLVR Bethlehem. It's the Wednesday edition of the Fritz Rock Show. I'm your host, AJ Fritz. We're talking with the legendary drummer Simon Kirk from Bad Company and Free. And Simon's appearing right down here in our backyard at the Sellersville Theater on Saturday night with the Leap of Faith Band. And I don't know, Simon, can you still hear me out there? I think we lost him.
I think we did too, AJ, but he'll be back.
Yeah.
I know how to find him.
Yeah, let's disconnect the call, and we'll see if we can get him back on the line. Simon Kirk is going to be appearing on Saturday night at the Sellersville Theater. And I really want to get to Simon and ask him about the Leap of Faith Band, because it sounds to me like it's a real leap of faith that he's putting this whole thing together. Simon actually playing drums in the band, but also stepping out front in the band and taking over on the vocals and playing some guitar for us and keyboards as well. So we're hoping that we'll get Simon Kirk back on the line here. In the meantime, I think what I'll do is I'll go back to Tons of Sobs and give you another one here. Oh, let's see if we can get throw on some moonshine for you. Okay, and hopefully we'll get Simon Kirk back on the line. Please remember to buckle up and be safe, and no texting while driving. Simon Kirk, we'll get him back.
Tombstone till the night.
It's almost a sin to pot down moonshine from free, but we got Simon back on the line. Hey, Simon, you're with us?
Yeah, I'm with you now. Sorry about that.
Oh, it happens. It happens. You know, no worries. Let's go back to what we were talking about. I was asking you about the whole transition between free and Bad Company, and when you guys were showing up at the studio and starting to rehearse and get this whole thing together, what kind of consciousness was going on between all of you at that time?
Well, you know, in 1972, Free broke up for the first time. You know, Paul Kossoff was in a terrible state.
Yeah.
And we didn't know a thing about addiction back in those days. The management's solution was to, just pack him off to his apartment with his girlfriend and get him to see a doctor occasionally. And, of course, that didn't work. And I know a lot about addiction now, you know, because I'm in a little club myself, and I know a lot more about it than I did back then. But anyway, we broke up, and then I formed a band called Kossoff, Kirk, Tetsu, Rabbit.
Yeah.
We made an album. Paul Rogers formed Peace, and Andy formed a band called Toby. We all went off in our little directions, and of course, we tried, but really, it wasn't very good, And Cross was in such a bad state that we decided to reform just to try and help him.
Yeah.
Of course, we didn't address the addiction problem, and it didn't take long before it, you know, he keeled over again, and we broke up for good at the beginning of 1973. And that's when Paul had met Mick Ralph, because his band Peace was opening up for Mott the Hoople. And they were jamming together every night, because Mick wasn't too happy with Mott. He wanted a different direction. So Paul said, well, why don't you and me write together, you know, and maybe form a band? And when I got back from my travels, I called Paul up, Paul Rogers, to say, you know, hey, man, what's happening? You know, we've always gotten on.
Yeah.
And he said, well, I've met this great guy, you know, and he's a really good player, and we want to form a band. Would I like to play drums? And I've always loved Paul singing, so I said, yeah, I'd love to. And then the hunt was on for a bass player, and that took a lot longer than we thought.
Okay.
The bass player was very hard to find.
And the bass player is so important, too, especially, you know, as part of the rhythm section, you know?
Right. And also, and B.B. King said a great thing years ago. He said, you know, if I like a musician, that to me is the whole thing.
Yeah.
If he's a good player, great, you know. But if the guy's a fantastic player but is not a nice guy, I can't work with that sort of guy. And Boz Burrell had only just started learning bass. This is amazing, this story.
But okay.
He'd come from King Crimson.
Yeah.
He'd been with King Crimson, which is one of the, you know, the most complex progressive rock band
of its era.
Boz, of its era. And Boz had been a singer. How he got to play bass with King Crimson is a mystery, but he played with them for about a year. And he was also playing a very complex bass. It's called an Ampeg scroll neck bass. So, and any bass player out there will go, oh my God. It's like playing a piano leg with four strings on it.
I think Rick Danko also played one, too. And
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Get a gold star.
Yeah.
Absolutely right. But, you know, he walked in. He was the last bass player on the list. And the reason he was the last on the list was because we didn't really like King Crimson. But we'd heard that he was available. We tried 15 others to no avail. Boz was the last guy. And he walked in. And I think the first thing he said was, well, you know, let's all go down the pub.
Is that where it started?
We did. That's how it started. And he didn't ask for any charts, or he just said, just play and I'll play along.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't want to know the key. He didn't want to know, what, you know, the chord progression. He said, just play. And we did. And I believe the first thing we ever played was Little Misfortune and Whiskey Bottle, and we just had a riot, and we were all a little inebriated, and I believe somewhere during the course of the evening we offered him the job,
and somewhere during the course of the night, he accepted. And we all woke up with sore heads the next day, and Boz was in the band.
It must have been a great time for you, even though the ashes of Free are falling away, and you're actually starting something whole and new and fresh, and then to have it take off the way that it did. I mean, Free, obviously, when All Right Now hit, it was a huge success and probably took everybody in the band by a bit of surprise. And when you get that kind of fame and fortune that fast, it's incredible, but it's also frightening, too.
Well, it is, AJ. The thing is, we were very ill-equipped to handle it. They say, be careful what you wish for. And,
right.
You know, it was every band's dream to have a number one record.
Sure.
And ours was number one. It was number one in about 15 countries. But we were young, and quite honestly, the management really didn't handle us very well at all. We were worked pretty much into the ground. You know, there was no time off. And I believe Paul Rogers was the first to say, hey, guys, you know, we've done an album tour. Let's just take a break. And we didn't. And then immaturity kicked in. And Andy and Paul decided to break the band up. And that was a terrible shock to me and Koss.
Sure.
You know, it was really... it was a devastating blow. And Koss never really recovered from that. You know, we didn't even tell the management until we were on the plane, you know, to the tour of Japan. That when we finished Australia, not to book any more gigs because we were going to break up. And that's why when we formed Bad Company, it was just such a relief. And honestly, the first 6 years of Bad Company's career were the happiest in my life in terms of career and having things go exactly as we planned. It was absolute heaven. And those 6 years from 74 to 80 were just marvelous. And I'll never forget them.
Well, you guys tore it up. I mean, think about, all the radio airplay that the band was getting back then. It was just hit after hit after hit after hit. It just didn't stop. It was amazing. What an amazing run. And now we're looking at 40 years. Simon,
I know.
And yet, you know, I'm sure, at least I would think that when you go back and you listen to the first album and the second album, you know, what's it like for you to go back to those records after 40 years and listen to them?
We had to listen to them all because they've been remastered and reissued on Rhino.
Yeah.
And they're great. I mean, they are good. I don't know what to say. You know, my girlfriend Maria was listening to Django Reinhardt. I was playing some Django Reinhardt because I think he's a genius. And quite innocently, she said, can we go and see him one day? This is fantastic music. I said, well, darling, he's been dead for 60 years.
Yeah, Django.
Music still lives on, even if it's badly recorded and there's crackles and scratches. If you make a good record, AJ, if you play it well, it's going to last, and it'll last for a long, long time. And I'm not denigrating a lot of today's groups, but I wonder if they'll be around in 40 years' time. And there was a certain period from 64 to 74, which will never, ever be duplicated. And the music from that decade was just stunning. And we were very fortunate to be part of that. And we took it from 74 to about 1980.
Yeah.
You know, we fought off punk.
Yep.
We fought off heavy metal. You know, we managed to survive.
Yeah.
Through good songs and good shows and great playing.
And I think in the end, Simon, you were part of that Stax, Bolts, Memphis, Muscle Shoals kind of sound in a lot of ways, in that it was, you were still in that generation with Otis Redding. And your style, I think, has borne out through the years to have held up very well because of your minimalist approach to music and serving the song and all of that. And I don't think that philosophy of approach to music carried on beyond 74 in my mind.
That's very interesting. I think simplicity endures, and flashiness really is a flash in the pan. I mean, flash playing. The only flash player who really made it for me was Keith Moon.
Yeah.
In that, but I don't think that he could have played really with anyone else because of his style. He had a very frenetic style. Whereas, you know, myself, I'm a bit of a chameleon. You know, Ringo could play with a lot of people. Bonzo actually played with Bad Company for a rehearsal when I sat out front and watched him.
Oh, wow.
You know, they all came to our rehearsal and said, "Hey, John, jump on the kit and let me hear how they sound out front." And I believe he played Bad Company with the guys. So if you close your eyes, I don't really think there was much difference, you know. And I played with them. I played in Munich. I played a whole lot of love with Zeppelin. And that's just my style. I'm a simple, solid guy, and I can work with a lot of people because really most songs only require a good backbeat and
yep.
feel. You've got to be able to feel
yep.
and play with empathy, you know. And luckily enough I have that.
Well, the other dimension to you is a songwriter and performing as a solo artist. And that's going to be a great opportunity and a unique opportunity, I think, for the people in Sellersville to experience Simon Kirk at a piano and acoustic guitar, singer-songwriter approach, and tell us about that, Simon. Well, that's going to be an interesting show.
I've been playing guitar for as long as I've been playing drums. It's a long time, over 50 years. And I'm proficient at it, and it's been a vehicle for me upon which to write songs. And I've been writing songs since, I would say, the middle of Free's career, around about 1971, I wrote my first song. And, I love writing songs and I love singing them. I'm not a great singer. I mean, you won't see Paul Rogers on Saturday night. You'll see a fan of Paul Rogers.
Yeah.
But I hold my own, and I've got some pretty good songs. And it's, you know, a solo career is something which can be the kiss of death for a band. And we've all flirted with solo careers. Not many solo artists who have been with bands have been successful. I can only think of Phil Collins, Peter Frampton.
Yeah.
Those are the two that spring to mind. I mean, most guys who step out from the ranks of a band have had very minimal success. And I don't know why that is. It's just the way people want to hear the band, and that's life. But I've had these songs percolating in my head for years and years. I've made a couple of solo albums over the last 10 years, and I just love playing and singing songs to people. But I will be playing drums on Saturday night. People want to hear it, and I'm not going to disappoint them. But I will be, you know, stepping out and playing piano and playing guitar as well.
The leap of faith, man. Are you jumping in and taking a leap of faith on this whole thing, Simon?
Well, that's exactly what happened there when we did this. The first rehearsal, I'd never met these guys before. I'd only seen them from on YouTube and like MP3s that they sent me.
That's so kind of really brave.
It was. Well, but, and then Ellen said, "Well, what are you going to call yourself?" And I thought, "Well, bloody hell, this is a real leap of faith here." So that's how the name came up. You know, it is a leap of faith. And they're really good players. They were having another rehearsal on Friday. And a very extensive sound check on Saturday afternoon before the show.
Excellent.
And we're going to be ready. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Excellent. This will be your first time playing at the Sellersville Theater. And I had listened to your interview this morning with John DeBella. And I also have a copy of the interview you did with Howard Whitman. And the Sellersville Theater in itself is a wonderful theater. Acoustically, you're going to love how it sounds in there because it's just absolute magic. It's a throwback to the great sound of your smaller theaters. But not only that, it's the membership of the Sellersville Theater. The listeners, the patrons of the Sellersville Theater, they're not the average fare. This is the educated eclectic listener. These are the people who go to Sellersville. They're the people of fine taste in great music and great musicians. So you're going to be playing, you know, to some people who really know who you are and what you're about. And I want you to be prepared for that,
that's music to my ears.
Yeah. It's should have a wonderful, warm reception for you down at the Sellersville Theater.
I'm looking forward to it, man. I really am. That's great. I mean, I've played clubs where people, after the first two songs, you know, they start chatting and drinking and, you know, it's a pain in the ass, but it comes with the territory, you know, and
sure.
I'm prepared because people know me as a drummer and, okay, that's fine. And I play drums and I play them pretty good, but I have this other string to my bow and, I really want people to listen. And I'm actually going to write out there's going to be a copy of the lyrics to my songs. Because everyone knows Ready for Love and Feel Like Making Love and Shooting Star. They know all those lyrics.
Yeah.
But I'm going to have my lyrics printed out so people can actually read along, you know. And, you know, it's going to be like being in church where I'm going to say, now, turn to page 102 and we're going to sing the first.
Well, you know what? You know? That's very unique, Simon. I think that's absolutely fantastic, man. And, it's going to allow the listener... It's going to allow that person sitting in that theater seat to really dig into the song with you. So I think that's a very stellar and novel idea.
Well, that leads into the question, Simon. Is there any plans to continue this this approach? I know that this isn't just a one-off, I wouldn't think.
It's a one-off. It is. I mean, it's not that life is a one-off. But there are people coming down from Chicago, and they want me to... potentially record an album, and my music is such that if I have some decent players with me, unfortunately I can't take these guys all over the country, I just can't afford it.
Sure.
But obviously if we play in the Jersey or PA area or even in New York, you know, because they're so good, I'll be able to have them with me. But there are plans to do more shows, absolutely, because Bad Company's not doing anything till next May, so that's a lot of thumb twiddling time for me. So I just want to get out and play.
And what's happening in May with Bad Co?
Well, we're doing a big tour. We're doing an extensive U.S. tour, and we're doing a European tour as well, all through next year. So, that's great. I just love playing with the guys. We get on well, and we play great together, and... looking forward to it.
What has been one of the most rewarding experiences for you throughout your career, playing both with Free and or Bad Company? What has been one of the things that really sticks out in your mind and your heart as truly rewarding for you?
Well, I think with Free, you know, that holds a lot of affection in my heart.
Yeah.
Because it's the first band, and we were like a little gang. I think the second Isle of Wight festival we did, the big one, yeah, that when we got out there on Friday, on Sunday morning, because we were supposed to go on Saturday night, but they overran, and our manager said, look, let's just go out Sunday morning, and we did All Right Now, and All Right Now was in the charts at the time, and, you know, about 300,000 people just got up and rocked out. That was one of the highlights. With Bad Company, yeah. Bad Company, I think the first gold album.
Yeah.
Because we know, you know, Free never got a gold record. We got a gold 45 for All Right Now, but we never got a gold album.
Yeah.
And our first gold album with Bad Company and headlining at Madison Square Garden, yeah, that was a terrific highlight for me.
Well, you know what? Those are milestones in anyone's career, and it's something that you'll have with you for all eternity. You'll take that with you when you get to the other side, you know. I mean, that's a beautiful thing. And we've lost some great players over the years. Andy has now passed on.
Yeah.
That
was sad to hear about that.
Very, very sad. Very sad. Chris Squire just passed away.
I knew Chris slightly. I didn't really know him that well. But, you know, we were all contemporaries. And when you get past the mid-60s, you know, that's... If you don't look after yourself, or if you've been touched by fate, you know, some people have gone just like flicking off a switch.
Yeah.
And it's sad. And there's some people who live into their 90s, and they're a wall pain in the ass, and they drank and smoked all their lives, and they'll live to be in 93.
Yeah, go just, figure.
It's just that fickle finger of fate.
Yeah. Know? Yeah, it sure is.
That's life.
You know, I wanted to touch on what you said earlier about the music that came out from 64 to 74 and that decade there of the incredible amount of experimentation that was done during those times. And, you know, to me, I believe that the greatest music came from those periods and through the 70s until disco hit. I wasn't a big fan of disco. But anyway, you're part of that legacy. And I think, Simon, you know, that's something to be very, very proud of, that you're part of the legacy of the great classic rock era. And I want to commend you on that, and I want to commend you on the music that you've given us, because, you know, the music is something very near and dear to everybody's soul. It touches us in a place that nothing else can. And to have that kind of a catalog behind you and to be out there still today coming out to entertain us, I think is the wonder of it all. And I want to thank you for all the music you've given us and continue to give. And I'm hoping that that you'll work again on some more solo stuff, and we'll be able to share that with the listeners.
I will, and I thank you for that very eloquent passage, AJ. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you. And is there any last tidbits or any last things you'd like to share with the listener as they prepare to come down to see you on Saturday night at the Sellersville Theater?
Not really, other than a really funny joke.
Okay.
How did I know it was going to end this way?
Well, you can... I don't know if this is live, what the hell, but it's not that bad, but I think it's kind of funny. A guy goes to the doctor, and he says, will you give me a checkup? And the doctor says, of course I will. So he starts checking him up, and he says after a while, he says, you know what, you got to give up. You got to stop masturbating.
Okay.
And the guy says, why? And the guy says, why? He says, because I'm examining you.
Simon,
did I pass the test?
You sure did, brother. Look, I'm really looking forward to the Leap of Faith show with Simon Kirk down here at the Sellersville Theater on Saturday. I'll be looking to press the flesh with you and say hello to you. And if Jim has his way, maybe I'll be able to bring you out on the stage on Saturday night.
That would be one.
What's that?
Great. Okay, guys, thank you very much. I'll see you both on Saturday. Thank you, Jim.
Sure thing, Simon. Great hearing your voice, and we'll look forward to a great show.
Okay, thanks again. Thank you, AJ.
Oh, bye-bye. You're welcome, Simon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Fritz Rocks, 91.3 FM, WLVR, Bethlehem. I potted out Moonshine, so we'll go back to that.